Yes,
Can
so...
Can you Italian accent on, Derek, for God's sake?
Mamma mia, I don't know. Do you want a pizza?
Here's the worst stereotype ever.
Tony Macaroni. yes.
Then on the fourth... oh, excuse me.
That was shocking.
Sorry about that.
You're from anywhere there.
Hey.
To quote Dick Advocaat, I've got no doubts about that.
Derek, that sounded like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Who is your daddy? What does he do?
Put the cookies down!
That sounded like a poo for the Simpsons.
Welcome to Quickie Man.
Yeah. Derek's impressions are now legendary throughout our workplace for sounding nothing like who he says they're supposed to be.
So if anything has sounded like Italian or Indian or Arnold Schwarzenegger, please get in touch with us. Either way, I want to know what you think.
Oh, dearie dear. Right, yeah. Moving on swiftly.
Happy New Year from the iReady podcast. Sorry it's been so long. There's just been so much happening over the last few while in our own personal lives and work, things like that. But we're back again and we're here for a new year. We've got a lot to cover again. So as always, I'm Derek and I'm back with my co-host Dave.
Yes, happy New Year everyone. And as you say, Derek, we've got loads to cover. There's loads and loads of games. I don't know how you're going to be able to get through them all. I think you should just summarise them all very, very quickly, because it's not as if we've really missed much. The games have been absolutely dire and we've got loads to cover off the field rather than on the field as usual, whereas, so I'll let you get fired in.
Aye. Started already.
Yes,
we've got a few features as well. We're back with our classic match. We've got our What a Player section. We've got a couple of interviews from we were on a works night out, so we done a few drunken interviews.
If you
can remember that. So we'll get to that eventually. So we'll just go down the tunnel and onto the pitch. So I think the best way Dave said is, he said to try and summarise it, and I'll just say pish.
Yeah, totally pish. There's no, all the games that I've watched since the last pod, I think there's maybe been one good result and the rest have all been pretty dire, and we've had some absolutely diabolical results as well, Derek.
Yep. I mean, 8 games we've had since the last pod. Again, for some reason, I don't know why, we just seem to, you know, that's what happens when you wait a month and a half for games. As you said, I think one decent game out of a lot of them, and the rest of them, I'm going to say it, I never even watched them.
No, I've seen the vast majority of the games, Derek, and I really wish that I hadn't bothered, especially the Hibs game at Ibrox. That was just absolutely shocking. And possibly, I don't know if anybody will agree with me, a game that I thought we were even worse was the game away to Queen of the South when we got beat there, because I can't even remember us having an actual attempt to goal in that game. It's just it's got worse and worse. We had the one good result in the cup, and that's been about it. The rest, it's been absolutely dire. But that's I can't really say much more than that. It's been lackadaisical. There's been absolutely no threat up front. Our big name players that we brought in have done absolutely hee-haw for us. Maybe with perhaps we'll take Nicky Law to that, and it pains me to say it because I've been one of his biggest critics, but he looked as if he's been the only player that could have done anything for us, certainly over the last month anyway. But the likes of Boyd and Miller have done absolutely nothing for us. The service into them, to be fair, has been poor. just very lackadaisical, no pace in the team whatsoever, and as you'll probably get onto later on, our only shining light through the whole of the season has now gone. Lewis McLeod, no longer a Rangers player, so it's looking very, very bleak on the field, and it's not looking too much. It's not looking much better off the field either. It's pretty depressing. What a great way to start the new year, Bud. You're bloody depressing me.
Oh no. So we'll just quickly go over the games. As I said, I've watched highlights of them. I've not watched the full games as of normally. So when I get the website updated, the match reviews will virtually no be there, because I'm no wasting my time.
I'll just say pish. That's the easiest way.
Exactly. I'm no wasting my time watching basically the same stuff over and over and over again. Anyway, the first game we got to was Saturday the 22nd of November. It was away to Hearts. We lost 2-0. No much can be said about that. We were utter dire. It was bad discipline from the team as well, with Smith getting sent off. Arguably that was the weakest of the three challenges as well, and he was the one who got sent off for it.
Yeah,
if you remember Miller and Boyd done that's similar right, challenges.
Certainly Boyd's one at the end of the game was just as bad. It was if no worse. So
Next game we did redeem ourselves. It was Sunday the 30th of November. It was at home to Kilmarnock in the Scottish Cup, and we won 3-0. In fairness, it was not really saying much because Kilmarnock were pretty shit and they never really offered anything up front anyway. So.
Yeah, that's right. It was still a good wee lift though, Derek, considering how bad they'd been against Hearts and hadn't really done anything. It was a good wee lift to say, you know, that we were playing a sort of established team in the Premier League and we won quite comfortably. They never put us under much pressure, but as you say, they were quite poor. But trying to be positive, that has been about our only performance since our last podcast, I think.
Well, we'll move on to the shitness again, and we'll go to Wednesday the 3rd of December. It was away to Alloa Athletic in the Petrofac semi-final. We lost 3-2 after being 2-0 up, an absolute shambles of a performance. You know, we just capitulated. We were 2-0 up, we capitulated within 17 minutes. They got a last minute goal. That's the third attempt we tried to get a result off Alloa this year, and we failed to do so. Just bear in mind, we played them about a week and a half beforehand and drew one each.
Yep, that's right, and we are playing them again in our next match, have we not? Is that our next game?
It is, yes. I've not looked that far ahead.
Yeah,
so.
I know we're playing them soon away, and that was where we drew 1-1, and going by the way the team's playing at the moment, it wouldn't surprise me if we got beat, because Alloa will be well up for it. They'll know that they've got what it takes to at least draw with us. They'll not be scared of us, and it's pretty shambolic.
Yep. Next game after that, we were expecting a decent performance. Well, we never really got it, and I think Cowdenbeath were unlucky to get come away with a loss there.
Yeah.
It was on Saturday the 6th of December at home. As I said, Cowdenbeath, we won 1-0. Not much to really say about that.
Again, it was dire stuff for Rangers. There wasn't a lot of attack in the game whatsoever. Both teams just sort of cancelled each other out and managed to get the winner, and that was really all it was. No offence to clubs like Cowdenbeath, but we should be whitewashing them. You know, when we play them, we should be absolutely annihilating them, and it's not happening at all.
On Friday the 12th of December, we were away to Queen of the South, and as you said, we lost that game 2-0. We were again absolutely shambolic. You know, it was the irony is one of our colleagues, it's his laddie that's the manager of Queen of the South now. So
that's right.
So we got a wee bit of ribbon for that.
Yeah, we did. He was waiting on us all. At our work, we're all known as the sort of blue nose group because there is quite a few of us, and he was waiting for every single one of us to get it right up us. But fair play, he jumped because we were absolutely diabolical. Like I said, I think that was about the worst performance out of the lot. Queen of the South really steamrolled us from start to finish. We offered absolutely nothing, and they got their 3 points, and it was well deserved, Derek. They really were by far the better team in every single department against us. We were utterly shocking in that game.
Yep. Next game we move on to is Saturday the 20th of December. It was at home to Livingston. We won 2-0. However, one of the goals was a lucky late on deflection. So nothing to write home about there again.
Yep, exactly.
Next game was Saturday the 27th of December. It was away to Hibs, and as you said, we lost that game. It was beyond shambolic. That was the game where I just said, I'm turning off. I'm not even bothered with it anymore.
We didn't just lose it, Derek. We were absolutely humiliated in that game. Completely and utterly humiliated. As you know, both me and you were night shift. I got up early to watch it, and I said to myself, this is the worst decision that I've made in a long time. Was only getting like 4 hours sleep and getting up early to watch this. It was so bad. It was bad enough at half time. You know, we were 2-0 down, but I actually had a wee glimmer of hope in the first 10 minutes of the second half, because I thought that, you know, that was the first time that we'd really shown that we were trying to get forward, and Law was unlucky with a couple of chances, but the standard of defending was as poor as I've seen yet. Mistimed tackles, not tracking players, no being able to clear the last man, no being able to clear, you know, balls away by simple headers, you know, just normal, standard, you know, schoolboy football, and we couldn't do it. We were utterly shambolic, and Hibs must have really been saying to themselves, you know, how easy was that game there? You know, were we playing Rangers there, or were we playing a team for the second division? It was, and there was no fight at all. As I say, the only player I would give pass marks to was Nicky Law, who was really trying like a bear to score, and he was unlucky with a few shots. I don't think it would have made any difference at all. I think if we'd have scored one, Hibs would still have scored four or maybe even five against us. It was just so bad as I've seen it. That, as I say, in the Queen of the South game before, were just really, really poor.
Yeah, and quite fortunately, one of our bosses is a Hibs fan, and he's not been back since that game.
That's
so
right, we've not got that to look forward to tomorrow, I think, Derek.
Aye. Next game, that was the last game we played there, was on Saturday the 3rd of January, at home to Dumbarton. We won 3-1. Again, a lacklustre performance. We got a goal, Dumbarton had something cleared off the line just before we went 3-1 up, and that was late on in the game as well, so we're quite lucky to come away with that.
Yeah, definitely.
By all accounts, again, Dumbarton were the better team for a majority of it as well. We offered nothing, and it's been the same shite, you know, week in, week out.
That's right. The only, like you said, Dumbarton had us under the cosh for the whole of the last sort of 25 minutes. They were really going for it. I don't know how we managed to let out, and then it was just the fact that maybe Kenny McDowell, you know, he brought on Clark to give us a bit of pace, and thankfully it paid off, because it was Clark that burst away right down the field in a simple pass into Dean Shields, and to be fair, it was a very calm finish. He never battered it, he placed it past the goalkeeper to make it 3-1. Guys like Dean Shields, the now Derek, what's annoying me is guys like him should be busting a gut at the moment, because they must be looking at the current Rangers team and saying to themselves, they are utterly, utterly terrible. I'm much better than that. I should be in that team. So guys, I mean, you would think it would be spurring guys who are on the fringes on to be saying, look, I could do a lot better than what's going on here. And guys like Dean Shields and David Templeton and all these guys who don't, you know, I've not been playing a lot of regular football, you would really like to think that they would be saying, God, I should be in this team. So if I get my chance, I'm going to grab it. But even that's not happening, Derek. It's just terrible now.
There's nothing in the team now that they just seem to want to just turn up and take their money. And, you know, as we've found out from an interview with Seb Forey that initially was in a French newspaper, Ian Black eats cakes at half time. You know, that attitude of our players right now.
I never saw that, Derek. I'm hoping it's maybe a Jaffa cake that he eats at half time, but probably a Black Forest Gatto or something like that.
No doubt. I mean, I don't know where to go with it. I mean, it's. There's nothing in the team now. I mean, we'll get on to a couple of points in a second. We're going to include it on the pitch because we probably should have started off with this. But, you know, the players are just devoid of any fight. They're devoid of any spirit. And I think this all comes back to the management. So, I mean, we'll round off the games here in terms of, well, as I said, we lost 3-1 to Dumbarton. Our next game, as you said, was on Saturday there. It's away to Alloa, and I have no hope whatsoever for the game. Ultimately, it leaves us trailing 13 points behind Hearts with 19 games gone, and we're 6 points ahead of third place Hibs. It's obviously Hearts and Hibs played there at the weekend, and they drew 1 each. So, Rangers have played 19, won 12, drew 2, lost 5, scored 41, let in 20, a goal difference of 21 and more than 38 points. This stage of the season with 19 games gone, losing 5 games in what predominantly is a part-time league is nothing short of a disgrace.
Yep, it's absolutely shocking. And as you say, at the moment, I can't see any player out there giving us that spark like what Lewis McLeod had done up until he played his last game. You know, I wouldn't say that McLeod, you know, came out and dominated games, but he just gave us that, you know, wee bit of class that the rest of the team hung on to and gave us that wee bit of belief. Now he's away, there's nobody. I mean, his place has been filled by Kyle Hutton. Now, didn't get me wrong, I thought that Kyle Hutton, when we're back in the second division, would be an absolute standout for Rangers. I thought he would be, you know, a first choice pick every week. It's no worked out for him. He's been the forgotten man. But again, Kyle Hutton is more of a defensive midfielder. So is Ian Black, a defensive midfielder. Even the likes of Arnold Peralta, who we've not seen for months, is a defensive midfielder. The only attacking midfielder we've got is Nicky Law, who, you know, just plays in fits and starts. And that's why we've been relying so much on Lewis McLeod. And like I keep saying, he's now away, and I really don't see where we're going to get that spark from on the pitch. I've got no idea.
No, I mean, you're talking about Kyle Hutton there, and somebody has summed it up. He came on, I think it was for something like Ian Black, and the best way to describe it is somebody put it on Twitter, it's like replacing a jobby with diarrhea.
that was your man Vic Vinegar, was it, Ben?
It was not.
He's been putting a few comments onto your posts and that, but it was pretty poor. Don't get me wrong, Derek, I think if you had to pick between Black and Hutton, I would maybe take a fully fit Kyle Hutton over Ian Black. I think he maybe gives us something slightly more, but we've got nothing at all going forward. He's only played one full game for us since, and that was the last match there against Cowdenbeath, so I don't know if he's maybe going to give him a chance in the team now, Hutton. I just hope he starts to improve his performances and maybe, you know, starts going back to the player that we knew back in this, you know, when we were in the Premier League. But it's pretty depressing stuff, and I can't see us buying I don't mean buying but even bringing anyone in loan, because we don't have any money. We've still, the one thing that we've never mentioned, Derek, is the fact that we've not got a manager, that McCoist is away. We've never mentioned that at all since the last pod. McCoist has left, he's been placed in gardening leave. I don't quite know what that means either. I think that's just to make sure he doesn't go anywhere near the club and embarrass the directors or anything like that. I'm not sure, but
well, we probably should have led with this story, to be honest.
That's some good editing for you, Derek.
Yes, I mean, we can't even, obviously everybody by now is aware of the farcical nature of the way he left. We can't even do resignations right these days. That's how much of a joke our club is.
Derek, don't get me wrong, both you and me have been saying for a while, look Ali, it's no working, we need to try something else. If it means you leaving the club and bringing in someone to try and get us back to winning ways, then that's what it'll take. Because the fans all love Ali, we always will, we've been saying it for ages, but it wasn't working as a manager. But as you say, the board can't even get that right when it comes to Ali leaving. He's stuck his heels in, he wants his money, and I don't know, I think that might bring quite a lot of resentment for a lot of the fans for doing that. I don't know what your feelings are on that point, Derek, but as I say, the fact that he's been placed on gardening leave, would it not have been better just to leave him in there? Because I don't think Kenny McDowell's going to get anything out the players that Ali McCoist would have.
No, well this is the point. I think, where was it? I think it was between the Queen of the South game, was it not, where he won a day before a game, he handed in his resignation, apparently, and then he was meant to be in charge of the team, and then and then there was something that he said he would be in charge of the team for the foreseeable future.
Yep.
Then there was a couple of meetings with the board, and then they eventually figured out a gardening leave issue. And in terms of him holding out for money, I think it's not as clear cut as that, to be honest. Ali McCoist, as much as he was on high wages, and a lot of people, don't agree with what he was on, etc., I think there's more to the story than that we're being yep. told as what's been, you know, with a lot of the goings on in Ibrox these days. I mean, we're still, you know, Walter Smith hasn't really came out and said anything since he left. Jim Traynor, neither has he. There's a lot going on there and we don't know about yet. So I think there's more to that story than that meets the eye. And I wouldn't take it as just that Ali's been a greedy bastard. Maybe that's me being, you know, through Ali tinted specs there. I would like to see the best in him. But at the end of the day, he's got a contractual right that he was going to, you know, see out his contract and do his notice. However, that has never been the case with a football club, to my knowledge, before, where a manager resigns or somebody resigns and has to serve a notice period.
Aye, that was a strange one for me as well. Like I said, the thing that's getting me now is that I think we were all happy for somebody new to come in and take charge of the club, somebody with fresh ideas, get all the players fit, because they're quite clearly not fit. You can see that. I don't know what they're doing in training. The fact that it's now Kenny McDowell. I mean, Lee McCulloch, again, we all like Big Jig, but he's not a centre-half. He never has been. You would have liked to have thought that maybe Jig would have said, right, I'm a part of the coaching team now, I'll give somebody else a shot here, but that's no happened either. He's still playing in there. The regime's still the same, basically. It'll still be the same training, and it'll basically still be Ali's team that they're putting out every week. So, a bit of a farce that Ali's no there if we're going to, you know, no bring in anybody and still be using all his tactics and his coaching staff. Then,
I mean that's the thing. Is McDowell? We should actually just say, obviously, Kenny McDowell has basically been put in the manager position with Durant being demoted and Gordon Jury being promoted to his number two and Jig coming in as a player coach. And it wasn't even McDowell's choice to bring in this coaching staff. It was done by the board, which is, you know, baffling to say the least. But McDowell came out and said, you know, I was a believer in Ali's tactics and, you know, we'll be doing that. And obviously, since he's been in charge, that's all we've done.
Exactly.
And it's been a joke. So this is the other problem with Ali leaving the time and not getting a new coach in, is if he was to serve out his, you know, 12 months, that would have taken him to mid next year, which is pointless.
Uh-huh.
And as well, I think it's a case of we need a new manager in now so that he can embed the ideas, because we can write off this season. Ultimately, whether we finish second or third makes no difference, because the first playoff round is going to be with the second or third place team anyway. Yeah. So it makes no difference whether they finish second or third. So, you know, right off this season, try and get to the playoffs, see what happens, and then we can, you know, get a manager in now to embed him in and get his own ideas in for next year. But what manager would take it right now?
Well, Derek, I'm looking through blue tinted specs, but I think there'd be a lot of managers in Scotland there would jump at the chance to take Rangers guys who have been Rangers men all their life. I know we've spoke about Billy Davis. I've spoken to Billy about Rangers and his feelings about Rangers. He basically told me that he would crawl in broken glass to take the Rangers job. That was quite a few seasons ago, right enough that he said that. But, you know, there's a guy who worked, very experienced manager. I know he's got a lot of problems off the field. He's got loads of problems with the press. I know all that. He's quite paranoid when it comes to press and things like that. But that's a guy who would come in, I think, immediately and shake the club up. How much money he would want for it, I don't know. You've even got to look to guys, Derek. Somebody made a valid point the other day, a guy that I had forgotten about, and I thought to myself, you know, would this guy make a difference? A big Rangers man, he's never hidden that fact. Experienced Premier League manager, he got his team, a very, very small team in Scotland, to third place in the league. He's been a manager in Holland, and that is Jimmy Calderwood. Now, Jimmy Calderwood's been at work for a few seasons. You're trying to say that if Jimmy Calderwood came in, that there wouldn't be changes, you know, the way that the players are training, the way that they're playing, that would change. The likes of Jimmy Calderwood surely wouldn't be demanding a big wage to get back into football, especially the club that he loves. and, you know, change things. It couldn't be any worse, Derek, and I would certainly be willing to give him a shot in there, even if it was just for the one season again, well, just to try and get the club back, you know, to the top of the league, or back winning and winning convincingly, because that's the problem now. If we're winning, we're just scraping through. We're not winning convincingly. It's just, we're just scraping through, and that's not what we need. We're needing belief back in, and maybe a guy like Jimmy Calder would be the man to go for, and we would get him, you know, for very, very, we wouldn't have to pay any compensation to any clubs or anything like that. So I don't know if you would think anybody else that could come in, even in the short term, you know, and change the club about.
Well, I can't disagree with any way Jimmy Calder would come and say he's a proven manager, and as you said, he's a Rangers man. Maybe it's not the best thing right now being a Rangers man, but certainly he's definitely got a proven track record. Plus as well, I mean, you could give him tanning tips as well with the amount of holidays you're going.
Is that right, mate? I could give him a list of the tanning salons in the area as well, so there you go.
I mean, one thing is as well, we've got a list of players here that's going out of contract at the end of the year. Jig, Black, Boyd, Daly, Mojne, Foster, Smith, Forey, Simonson, Crawford, Robinson and Hutton. Now, maybe with the exception of Forey, well, I wouldn't be disappointed if any of them leave.
I was about to say to you there, would you offer any of those players a new contract, any of them?
As I said, Forey is probably the only one that I would even have a slight consideration over, and even then I'd still be, you know, ambivalent either way, well, to be honest with him. But every other one of them,
I'm going to be harsh and say that there's not one player there that I would offer a new contract to. I would rather that we were playing some of the younger players that are out on loan and playing well on loan than all of the players, definitely. Starting for the goalkeeper right the way through the defence and the midfield. And then, as I say, the biggest disappointment to me personally this season has been Chris Boyd. He's just not the player he was last season playing for Kilmarnock, and I really don't know what's happened there with him at all. I really don't.
It's not as if he's not had the chances as well up front. He's been given the ball several times, and he's just, you know, there was a good couple of instances in the Dumbarton game there I seen, and, you know, he was snatching at chances, it was always going wide. He's just a man lacking confidence, and to be honest, I think that's with the same as the whole team. There's just something in the team now that is just totally lacking, and they don't have the self-belief, they're feared to go out and play these teams by the look of it.
I spoke to a friend of mine, Derek, who's a big Falkirk fan. Him and his wee boy go, he's a season ticket holder, he has been for years and years. And we were talking about Rangers, and he says to me, he says, I really don't understand why, even if a manager, he says, you know, isn't cutting it. He says, the players that you've got, and I says to him, I say, see, at the start of the season, if I was to tell you that Falkirk were signing Chris Boyd, Kenny Miller and Nicky Law, I says, would you be expecting Falkirk to win the league? He says, 100% he would be expecting. Just with those three players, he would be expecting Falkirk to win, because he watches Falkirk, and as he said, they've basically got one player that's a half-decent player, and that's an ex-Rangers player, Rory Loy. And he says he's the only player that we've got, he says, that's half-decent. He says, but we're still a mid-table team and a comfortable mid-table team. He says, and that's with one half-decent player. He says, I'd like to think with three, you know, proven Premier League players in the team, he says, that we would be winning that league. He says so. He says there's something far, far wrong there. Whether that's down to training, whether it's down to management, or whether it's just down to the players don't give a shit, or it's a combination of all three.
I think there's an attitude issue with Ibrox as well now with the players. They just seem to think they can turn up, you know, do a piss poor job and the fans will not react to it and things like that. Now, a thing that, you know, I meant to mention in the last pod is John D.C. Gow put a tweet out in October, and he says, this Rangers squad have had more players responding to fans than every other I remember combined.
Yeah,
there's no discipline in the team. And I think that was highlighted once again with Ricky Foster.
Yeah.
Quite rightly so at the weekend. From what I've seen and what I've heard, it was absolutely abysmal. He should have been nowhere near that park, and he mouthed to the fans to fuck off, basically.
After the Hibs game, Derek, did you see? I mean, it was him. He was absolutely shocking in the Hibs game he made, and it was his fault for the third goal. He just sort of tripped over his own feet when he was, you know, running into cover. he was just absolutely appalling in the Hibs match, and he should never have been near the first team again, just like what you said. But he is back in the team. He'll probably keep playing at right back as long as McDowell and you know that regime are all still there. As you said, he should be nowhere near it. And for a guy who's supposed to be a Rangers fan getting the chance to play for Rangers, he should be taking it on the chin if the supporters are giving him a hard time. And as you say, I've never ever known a Rangers squad of players, him and Mosny, guys like that, to turn round and start mouthing back at the fans. I think we've got every right to mouth off at them if they're being utter terrible in a match.
Yeah.
And they should basically just bloody take it, because they've got the privilege. Every single one of your supporters would do, you know, that's their ultimate dream, about their playing in that strip, playing, and I know that every single one of us would give 100%, and we would be the first ones to hold our hands up if we made an arse of anything. But as you say, the arrogance of some of the players is
unbelievable. The thing is as well, Foster, you know, got a lot of Twitter abuse, and some of it got a wee bit personal, which, you know, it was a wee bit too much, to be honest. And it shouldn't get personal, you know, talk about, you know, your
the game,
you know,
and the
yeah, the game and how
I,
bad
yep,
is it.
No, yep, I agree, 100%.
But this is the thing though, is Foster, you know, started to respond to this on Twitter, which I don't know what the Rangers guys are talking, you know, their advisors are saying they should be told to get off Twitter, as far as I'm concerned. But he started responding it because somebody called him abysmal and a cunt, which, you know, the first part was certainly right. Or maybe the second as well, I don't know. But, you know, he says, his excuse was, he turned around to this guy and says, listen, I've got kids that follow me, you know, watch your, you know, wind your neck in, basically. So the Rangers Supporters Trust said, you've told somebody to fuck off in front of my presence during a game when there's kids there as
exactly,
well.
Exactly, aye.
Foster blocked the RSD after that.
Sure.
You know, so they can't take it, and they didn't seem, they're that thick, they can't seem to see the issues that they're causing here. It's certainly affecting our attendances as well. Over the, obviously, you know, there's been a lot said about attendances, and, you know, people who support the current, you know, background regime are blaming the people who are boycotting the club, and we'll get to the accounts as well, and that turned out to be a load of bullshit. It's a combination, obviously, of the shit performances and just obviously all the off-field stuff that's happening. But 2011-2012 there were 46,500 on average. Next year we had 46,000 average. The next year we had 43,000 average. So far this year we've had 32,500 average. So certainly something is happening in terms of attendances. When I think there's a lot of talking to, you know, our boss Gordon, he said that he was getting a chance at a free ticket, and given the performances, he would never be back until it's sorted out. So I think a lot's got to be said about the on-field performances as well, and something needs to drastically change quickly.
We've been saying that for a while now, Derek. When that's going to happen, I've got absolutely no idea, though. That's the only thing. That's the sort of darkening thing about it all, is we don't know when it's going to change. It needs to change drastically. I think just the simple change in first-team coach to somebody completely different, I think there would be a lot of fans would come back, you know, to start off with, to get back behind the team if there was a whole new coaching structure in there. Again, it comes down to money. And I'm sure you'll get onto that in the next section as well, like you said, the finances and stuff like that, which are just about as dire as the team's performance.
Yes, that's a good wee segue there, Dave. I'm glad you said that there, because that's what I was just about to say.
How professional can you get?
We've still not lost the touch.
Exactly. What can I say? There's nothing worse than losing your touch. Yeah.
Oh, So we'll now move on to the Blue Room.
Quite simply, we're the only club in the world who could do that. We are the people.
Right. Where do you start? This is probably not going to be in order. I'll try and put it in as much order as I can. What I've got here is we had the accounts coming out. It shows you we're still losing a whole load of money. I think it was, we were needing £8 million by the end of this month. We'll get onto that in a minute. But more details emerged of the shambolic merchandise deal that we've got with Sports Direct and Mike Ashley. Turns out that for every £10 spent within the club in terms of merchandise, we only get 75 pence back.
No, absolutely incredible. I know now, this was Charles Green's incredible, fantastic deal that he had with Sports Direct.
Yeah, it turns out as well that if you remember the GGB, we were getting about £4.5 million a year for that, and that was deemed shambolic at the time. Now, I think Celtic have released some of their details about their merchandise deal, and I think they're only earning, you know, slightly less than that for what merchandise deal they've got. No, that was for their strip deal only. So, I mean, they're certainly raking in money for that. So, with our total merchandise deal combined, we're only getting 75 pence in every £10. Yep. I mean, it's a joke. Further details emerged as well. I think it was Sons of Struth that broke this, that the naming rights for Ibrox, obviously, that was given back by MASH back to the club. There was always something going to be something there that was not right about that. Turns out that it looks as if it's been swapped for the shirt sponsorship deal for next year.
Yeah.
Because the Red 32 or 32 Red, whatever they're called, was only for a year anyway. So we'll see if that transpires.
Yep.
Just before the AGM happened on, I think it was at the 6th of December, something like that, 26th, I can't remember, 22nd of December it was, sorry. The CEO was appointed, and that was Derek Lambias, obviously another henchman of Mike Ashley.
Yep.
So we kind of fully expected that. A few mixed reviews about him. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of Rangers fans, including yourselves, that are sceptical about him, given his links with Ashley. But there's a lot of people who are affiliated with Newcastle says, you know, he's a pretty decent guy, and he'll get in there and he'll do the job. So,
Derek, I think we were at the stage just now that if anybody comes in that can sort out this mess, he'll be welcome with open arms by all the supporters. As you say, we're sceptical because he's Ashley's man, but because the club is in such a shambolic state at the moment, we'll take anybody that's willing to come in and actually fix it. So we'll wait and see, you know, what he does in, you know, the very short time that he's going to be there. And I think I don't think he'll be there for that long.
Well, we'll need to wait and see on that one. AGM time. Now, I've only got brief details about this because, you know, I was so disgusted at everything. You know, if you remember last year, the first AGM in like 3 years, remember how they erected a big, massive, you know, platform on the main stand, mm-hmm. and the fans were well undercover and it looked like quite a professional outfit. Well, this year looked like a makeshift tent from Wickes. It was about 100 feet away from the shareholders.
Yep. You know? It was a gazebo and a karaoke machine, I think, that they had in there, you know, to put on. But I suppose times are hard, the new Derek, eh?
Aye. Ultimately, it ended up being an absolute disgrace. David Summers was an absolute farce. You know, how he got away with it and how he's still in a position after what he came away with and how much disrespect he showed fans and shareholders is beyond me. You know, he came out with a line, once you are all the chairman, you can make the decisions.
Yep.
You know, he just refused to answer questions. He wanted to take a bunch of questions first rather than answering one question at a time so he could deflect it. He never answered questions. You know, he deflected everything. You know, then Bomber came up in his usual self, absolutely mental, calling the Easdale's rats and things like that. Ultimately, there was a lot of boos from the shareholders, which quite rightly so, yep. because nothing was getting answered, and the answers were shambolic as well. And ultimately, it was cut short. Sandy Easdale stepped up and says, "Listen, you want me to answer questions or you want to boo?" You know, just treating us with total disrespect as usual. So it was cut short once again, as was last year's one, because they really couldn't handle the pressure. All the lines were fluffed, but they couldn't answer the questions properly. So
I think with everything that's came out over the last few days, Summers has been shown to what he really is. He's out for number one. He's out to, you know, he keep himself in a job. There's been a lot of stories have came out about potential investors, which he's kind of, you know, it's not happened. There's been a lot of stories came out where, you know, he's been desperate for the deal, you know, Mike Ashley's deal to go through, basically, because he knows that he'll be kept, you know, so securely in his job. It's just came out to show that he's just there. He look after number one, and the club aren't in his best interest. And for a guy in his position, that's just completely unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, as you said today, there was an email that was leaked out from somewhere, and it basically was him pleading for his job and making sure that the Ashley deal does go through so that he's safe in a position. Now, as far as I'm concerned, surely there should be some sort of investigation by AIM in relation to that, because it's surely share tampering. You know, him trying to influence another shareholder party. At the time, it was like an outside influence to you know, persuade, you know, one, give some favour over one shareholder than the other.
I think, so, as you said though, Derek, the guy is so brazen at the moment and really doesn't care about what the supporters or anything are saying about him, so I really don't think he would give two shits what, you know, and anybody says about any letters or anything like that. I don't think he's bothered about what light he gets painted in, as long as he's got his job, he's collecting his massive wages that he'll get. It doesn't matter if the club's going under or it's, you know, going into another financial meltdown like it did already. You know, as long as he's in there and he's collecting his wages, then so what?
Yeah. We'll move on to the next bit, which is that obviously in the AGM there was obviously, you know, resolutions they had to vote. I think it was resolution 9, and don't quote me on the wording of this. I've looked into it and it's all, you know, highfalutin language I can't understand. But it was to do with investment into the club, and resolution 9 was voted down, which was a case of, you know, basically asking if outside investment can come in without shareholder approval. So it was rejected. So we're on the back foot already, and yep. It was basically teed up so that, you know, only inward and, you know, existing investors can invest further in the club unless there's a 75% majority of shareholders say yes, an outside investor can come in. Now, I think that was voted on the back of the fact that Mike Ashley had applied to the SFA to up his stake in the club to 30%. Well, the SFA rejected that application, so they've either done us a massive favour or they've potentially condemned us into another administration event. I hope and I'm thinking it's going to be the former of the two.
Yeah.
Because Ashley's reign on, or his grip on this club needs to start to get loosened with the dodgy dealings he seems to be doing already.
Well, I think it's possibly worked in your favour, Derek, because I'm sure you'll go into the whole Dave King Three Bears scenario that's came in as well, that we're maybe starting to get Rangers men back in control of the club, and Ashley possibly not being able to, you know, tighten his grip on the club that he already has. So it's maybe been a good thing for us, but again, it will remain to be seen what happens in the coming weeks if things are as dire financially as what everybody's reporting.
Yeah, as you said there was a thing with the Three Bears, which have been aptly...
The Three Bears.
aptly coined in the media. It was George Letham, Douglas Park, and I think his name is George Taylor, who George Taylor's an existing shareholder with about a 3% stake in the club already. Now, they have bought shares, the entire shareholding stock of Laxey Partners, and that was around 20% they've got in total now for about 6.5 million.
Yep.
Now, Laxey came out and said that their boy, was it Kingsnorth, I think his name is basically slammed Summers, calling him a wet fish, and basically just Ashley's whipping boy. He'll say anything to please Ashley, mm-hmm. which we all knew, and so that's their interpretation of it, and they've said that they're wanting no more of it, and they want somebody else to come in and you know, try and wrestle control from Ashley. Now, that's saying a lot, considering that Laxey Partners sided with the board in the last, well, obviously this AGM and the last AGM.
Yeah, I know. I think it's maybe they've maybe sort of realised everything that's going on and thought it was time to speak out at long last, because they can see how bad things are.
I think that was ultimately once their representative Crichton was ousted by Ashley, I think they kind of seen the writing on the wall there. So it's been a good move that way that this has happened, because it's meant that we've got, you know, a large majority of shares in the hands of somebody or a group that seem to want to do well for the club.
Yeah, they are seen to have Rangers' best interests at heart, which is all we're looking for, really. Guys who are really just wanting to see the club successful again, guys who are, you know, Rangers fans and not guys that are basically here just trying to make a quick buck.
Yeah. Now, the next one here is a very interesting one. I must have been listening to the pod because I told them to fuck off or buy shares the last time.
You did that. You've said that a few times, Derek.
Yes, so Dave King has bought existing shares from Artemis or something like that? I don't even know their name. Artemis and another company who own shares. They've got rid of their full stock and he owns around about 16% of the club now. Obviously with that has got a lot of the other side, you know, getting all, you know, wet and bothered about this and saying not fit and proper person, blah, 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 blah. Couldn't give a fuck off, basically. But, you know, it's certainly a step in the right direction. We've been asking him to buy shares for a long time now. He's bought shares, so at least now that with Resolution 9 voted down, all four people are in a position now that they can buy more shares from within in the next share issue.
Yep.
Which is a good thing.
The only thing, as I say, this is all well and good, Derek, but again, if things are so dire financially and we're needing a large amount of money invested in the club to basically keep it afloat, that doesn't help us at the moment because they've basically just bought existing shares.
Yeah.
It's not really helping with the current problem that we have just now, so
yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen next.
I mean, I don't know if we need to wait until there's a share issue for them to buy more shares or they can go straight in the now and buy a massive block. So, obviously, with a new share issue, it'll dilute their stake down and all the existing shareholders' stake down, but obviously with the view of them buying more. So, as you said, they need to kind of buy shares pronto.
Yep.
Now, that brings me on to the next two things here. We've got Robert Sarver,
mm-hmm.
An American banker who owns the Phoenix Suns NBA basketball team.
We knew nothing about this guy until, what, 2 days ago?
2 days ago.
Yep.
Apparently he's put an £18 million bid in to basically buy out basically all the shares. This bid was put in before Christmas, so it was before the Three Bears and King had bought their shares. So ultimately, you know, it was... it's going to be a non-starter the now, which it's been released today through a stock market announcement saying that it's been rejected. Now, there's a lot of bears getting all kind of hot and bothered about that. And, you know, as I've put on Twitter just this morning, yeah. Camden, because we always knew that...
What's your take on it, Derek? What do you think is going to happen now, or what has happened and what's going to happen now?
Well, I think quite rightly so. As when the news broke, you know, I think I put a thing on Twitter saying everybody waiting now. We've been in this position before. We know nothing about the guy. What's his reasoning for wanting to invest and buy out the club? Certainly on what he's came out and made a statement as well. He's talked a good game, but so did Charles Green at the same time. You know, so did a lot of people at the same time. The only person who hasn't said anything is Mike Ashley, funnily enough.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's certainly got the experience of running a sports company.
Yep.
He's had other dealings with sports as well, and he certainly looks to be a very wealthy man. But again, so is Mike Ashley. So we need to, you know, just keep our counsel in this one, make sure we know what he's doing. He's apparently been in talks with the Three Bears about this. I think it's maybe Douglas Park, I think, is kind of been in talks with. So certainly if he's been brought in by this group, then certainly I would say it's a good sign.
Mm.
But we just need to wait and see. Ultimately, as I said, it was going to be rejected because his offer came in before 35% of the club had already been bought up, so the total landscape had changed. So we'll need to wait and see if he puts in a revised bid, if they're going to sell, or what's happening. Now, on the back of that, Sandy Easdale so generously has loaned us £500,000 of his own money, allegedly, as a short-term payment. Allegedly, it was to pay the HMRC for our national insurance, otherwise we're going to be forced with a winding up order.
Uh-huh.
Very strange that has came out, you know, after with the story about an £18 million bid coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Sceptical about it, given the fact that it's came from him. And are you trying to tell me that once again they've been holding off on paying tax and national insurance when they know the problems they've had before with that?
Surely not.
And are they trying to tell me that they're not clued up enough that they never knew a bill was coming? Mm. So I'm very sceptical about this. And as people have been alluding to, when a bid like this came in from Sarver and it's been broke to the public domain, the first thing you would maybe think about doing is if you want to keep your existing shares and, you know, make sure nobody buys it, is basically get shares suspended because there's apparently some sort of financial crisis, which, you know, would happen if there was some severe financial crisis. So it would prevent anybody buying shares.
You know,
call me a cynic, but, you know, it's all about self-preservation with the existing people there now. So we'll need to wait and see what happens with that.
Yeah, aye. As you say, very strange that all this happens, you know, the day after that all gets leaked in the press that this has all happened. But again, a good point you made there, Derek, the fact a lot of people seem to think that this bid has just sort of came in yesterday, when it actually happened, you know, quite a while ago before the Three Bears and Dave King got involved. So it was going to be declined, the bid. We just hope this guy's not going to disappear into the Phoenix sunset and never come back to us again. I hope that this is something that's going to go on, because he certainly does look to have the credentials. As you say, if he's been brought in by these now new shareholders, surely they would only be bringing in guys that would be looking for the best interests of the club as well. So I really keep my fingers crossed that something can happen soon and we do get quite a big bit of investment. But the way things are going at the moment, it's another one of these, just have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, one point to note about this server bid is the fact that, well, if it came in before Christmas, what the fuck has the board been doing with it for this time?
Exactly.
You know, if they know we're in desperate need of money, why haven't, you know, they moved on it then? You know, this is a guy with, you know, this is what annoys me, is the fact that with the Dave King bid, they rejected that because they claimed there was no proof of funds. Now, where is the proof of funds for the existing board? Do we know for sure that, you know, the likes of these deals are worth as much money as they are? What about Blue Pitch? What about Margarita? Who are they? Never mind the proof of funds.
Am I maybe picking this up wrong though, Derek? If this guy comes in with an £18 million bid and all the certain shareholders say, no, absolutely no way, I'm wanting a hell of a lot more money for my shares than that. That's been the sort of main reason that the bid's been knocked back, because there's a lot of guys out there that are wanting a big payout of their shares.
Well, in a statement,
am I picking this up wrong?
No, you're correct, because in a statement that came out this morning as well, it read something like, well, we seem £18 million is totally undervalued for what he's wanting for the club, and also that the proof of shares issue. So, but you've got to remember, yes, technically you might think it's undervalued, but undervalued for a club that's in a deep financial crisis, apparently.
Yep.
Where their shares are not, I mean, it worked out at 18 pence a share, apparently, that he was bidding, which is not undervalued, really. It's only 2 pence a share off what the stock market is, well, a couple of days ago. So, and oh, one other thing about this, the fact that the Three Bears and King, the shares they bought them at 20 pence, bearing in mind these shareholders bought them at 70 pence,
right.
So it shows you that they've lost 50 pence a share. That shows you how dire the position is, and they were just wanting to get out of there.
Yeah.
They were willing to lose 50 pence a share.
Again, that was the hedge fund Laxey Partners that had sold there, so they were basically just wanting to get what they could and out, but the rest of the sort of shareholders in there are guys like the guys who are on the board at the moment that are basically wanting to try and get as much money as possible out of the club. I mean, that's the way I see it, is just that they're just desperate to try and line their own pockets at the moment, and they've seen this bid and thought, no, there's no way, that's not what I'm wanting for it, and it's been turned down. So
somebody on Twitter said today, this server coming in, he says, you know, he's worth hundreds of millions of dollars anyway. Why would he come in an asset strip, you know? And quite rightly, somebody put a retorted back saying that, well, what exactly is a billionaire Mike Ashley doing just now?
Aye.
You know?
Exactly.
So if his asset is there to be stripped,
yep,
by somebody for their own gain, they will do it, you know, ultimately. So you've got to remember, Rangers are a massive, massive brand, and or they could be a massive brand. I mean, certainly I've discussed it in the pod before, Rangers are basically unknown in America,
yep,
apart from obviously supporters clubs and anybody associated with,
yeah,
it. You know, you go into any shop, you'll see Celtic tops, you'll not see Rangers tops anywhere, yep, which is diabolical. So Rangers could have a massive potential in America. So that's one other aspect to look at this server bid as well, and if he's a genuine guy brought in by these Three Bears, then, you know, it's certainly, you know, could be a massive, massive play,
yeah,
for us. But we'll just need to wait and see what happens if he comes in with another bid,
yeah,
and One last thing to mention on the Blue Room section as well is one of Mike Ashley's other stooges, what's his name? Barry Leach, a very apt name, has been brought in as the new financial director.
That just happened yesterday, is that right?
It did, yes. After all this news broke, and after the £500,000 loan had been given by Easdale. So it's quite apt that, you know, we're appointing a financial director when there's actually no finances to direct, apparently. Just remember, though, apparently, and this is a part of the whole BDO and police investigation, is the fact that there was claims of no money in the bank, which is why we went to administration in the first place. So these whole claims about we're in a dire financial position, I wouldn't believe it as such, because, you know, where has the money gone then? You know, that's what I want to know.
Do you think this is a media spin by certain people that we won't name to make it look as if the club's in a terrible financial position, but the people on the board are going to set it right, Derek?
I think so, because allegedly there's still £590,000 to come from the Mike Ashley, the MASH group for Rangers Retail. So, and that's not been paid into us yet, allegedly. So,
and the money for the, I mean, I know it's penny pinching, you know, when we think of what we used to do, but we've still got money owed to us for Dundee United as well, for Charlie Telfer.
Oh yeah,
that was supposed to be in by today, or was it yesterday? And I don't know if it was received or not. So it's quite bad that we are sort of penny pinching like that. Plus, we had £1 million for the sale of Lewis McLeod also. Yeah. And there, so I mean, there's, you know, approximately £2 million, as you've said, in total, you know, with those three things there. So surely, as you say, they can't turn and say there's no money in the bank at all.
Oh well, they can, because they certainly do it, and you know, I'm going to leave that there before I get myself in trouble.
Exactly.
But anyway, we'll move on now, and we'll go back to one of the favourite sections, the classic match.
Yes, the classic match.
Manchester, brace yourself. Rangers are coming!
Right, Dave, that's a pretty good game, hasn't it?
A cracking game here, actually, Derek. It's a way back 1997, a game that it was just a sort of ordinary league match against Hibs at Easter Road, away back in 1997. I think it was the 4th of October 1997. We had a lot of our classic quality players on show. Well, some of them, anyway. You look at the Rangers team that Walter Smith put out that day. There's no Andy Gorham, so it was Theo Snelders, remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Theo Snelders in goal. Again, a strange Walter formation, you know, we're going about Ali's formation and tactics and stuff like that, but when I look at this team, I still really can't figure out what sort of formation he was playing, because he had Alec Cleland, who was a right back. We had Stally Stensas, who was a left back. Then we had Sergio Perini, who was a right back as well, but played centre half for Rangers. Gordon Petrich, who was a centre half. Tony Vidmar, who was our left back. So we basically got two left backs, two right backs, one centre half. Then we had Charlie Miller, Paul Gascoigne, Rino Gattuso, George Alberts and Marco Negri. Now that was the team that he put out, so I was maybe thinking that the likes of Big T, Tony Vidmar, was maybe playing on the left-hand side, I'm struggling here because Alberts was playing as well, so I'm not quite sure what formation he played, but anyway, I'll go through it again.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Snelders, Cleland, Stensas, Perini, Petrich, Vidmar, Miller, Paul Gascoigne, Marco Negri, George Alberts and Rino Gattuso. So, Hibs' team back then, the likes of Pat McGinley, Barry Lavetti, Kevin Harper, you know, these guys were all sort of established Premier League players back then, and, you know, it was an absolutely fantastic match. The first half kicked off, and Hibs put us under the cosh straight away. Tony Vidmar, sort of tackle on one of the Hibs players, I think it was about Lavetti or Crawford, possibly. Free kick was straight into the centre. I think this was in the first minute. Straight into the centre, and Theo Snelders, easy ball straight to him, but he drops it right in front of the other striker. And we're like, oh my god, but he manages to redeem himself, pull the ball back. Kevin Harper again raced through after dispossessing Paul Gascoigne, all the players that we had. Dispossesses Gaza, he was really, really fast, Harper, right through. Thank God he put the ball over the bar. He was really pulling the strings for Hibs in the first half. He had Rangers under all sorts of pressure. There was then another chance where somebody had a sort of half volley right in the near post, and Snelders pulled off a great sort of reaction save. But Hibs were all over us at that point. But then in the 20th minute, Charlie Miller was through in the box and he was brought down by the goalkeeper, so it was a penalty to Rangers.
And right through the goalkeeper. Well, Skelton won't be too happy with himself there. Certainly Negri just lashed it at him, and the power was enough to take it underneath the goalkeeper.
Marco Negri so nonchalantly steps up and basically passes the ball straight to the Hibs keeper, but he was slow in reacting to get down. I don't know how the hell it managed to go through him, but it managed to go into the net and Rangers were 1-0 up. Hibs feeling slightly dejected because up until that point Hibs were the better team. Then Gordon Petrich, who got dispossessed, the ball was played back and the shot was deflected just past the Hibs out for a corner, and from that corner Hibs scored. It was a bit of sort of head tennis in the box, then it was prodded in by Pat McGinley to make it 1-1, and to be fair to Hibs, quite rightly so. 43rd minute, two minutes before half time, to be fair, as I keep saying, Hibs the better team in the first half. Pat McGinley running through to Barry Lavetti. Barry Lavetti kept his head, slammed it past Theo Snelders to make it 2-1 Hibs, and Hibs going into the second half and they're 2-1 up at that point. Now, I was at this game, Derek, it's the first time I've ever been to Easter Road, and I thought, God, we're really losing it here, especially in midfield. But Walter Smith must have been thinking the same way, because he brings Stuart McCall on for Sergio Perini, and that really did change the match for Rangers. It gave us that bite in midfield that we were needing. But right as soon as the game kicked off in the second half, Hibs actually went 3-1 up, because Barry Lavetti dispossessed Alec Cleland on the right hand side, or Alec Cleland's right hand side, Lavetti's left hand side. He put the cross in, Stevie Crawford with a diving header to make it 3-1 to Hibs. So there we all are in Easter Road thinking that we're going to get pummeled. But we didn't have to wait long, because Paul Gascoigne picks the ball up, he's running through, he's brought down on the edge of the box, and then we see one of the best Gaza moments in his Rangers career.
Gascoigne perhaps, Alberts moves away. Gascoigne sends it in! Oh, it's a wonderful goal by Paul Gascoigne! 50 minutes gone here at Easter Road, and Rangers are right back in this game. Hibernian 3, Rangers 2. Superb free kick right into the corner. Keeper had no chance. Right in at the postage stamp.
A quite phenomenal free kick by Paul Gascoigne, right over the wall and as accurate as you can, right between the post and the bar, you know, right in the top corner. Hit it with a fantastic pace. It was just the perfect free kick for outside the box. That brought it back to 3-2 to Rangers. And then after that, I can just show you a wee bit of magic really does spur the team on, because after that there was a throw in by Stuart McCall.
This is Albert. He's going to try one here. It's a good one. This is incredible stuff. It's George Albert. The perfect answer. 2 minutes later, 52 minutes gone here at Easter Road. And George Albert, his fourth goal of the season. He got 4 in the 5 games against Hibs last year. He strikes again with awesome power here. Terrific effort, and like Gascoigne's, away far into the net, giving the goalkeeper absolutely no hope. What a dramatic afternoon here at Easter Road. Hibernian 3, Rangers 3.
Finds its way to Albert's, and then again possibly one of the best goals that George has scored for Rangers as well. I don't know how far out it was, Derek, you watched it back yourself, but it absolutely thundered a shot. He just picked the ball up, he turned round, faced towards goal, took like one touch and then just hammered the ball again, thundering, almost broke the net, faced so far out to make it 3-3 to Rangers. Phenomenal. And after that, we knew we were going to go on and get the fourth goal. And it was the man, Marco Negri, who there's been a lot, he's been on to Twitter a lot recently.
And here is McCall. Negri's calling for it. That's a nice ball through to Negri. And simple as you like, Rangers are in the lead. Hibernian 3, Rangers 4. Marco Negri gets his second goal of the game. It's his 18th of the season, in what's turning out to be a quite remarkable afternoon at Easter Road. And even that one brings a smile to his face. What a fight back by Rangers.
Basically, we were keeping the ball in midfield. We were passing it about from right to left. The ball comes to Stuart McCall, who looked up. He sees Marco Negri running diagonally to the corner of the Rangers box, so no even a great goal scoring opportunity, but he threaded the ball through, and Negri, just that killer instinct, just one bang low along the ground past the goalkeeper to make it 4-3 to Rangers. Absolutely incredible, being 3-1 down and scoring, you know, two magnificent goals, and then a great striker's instinct there by Negri. That wasn't the end of it though. Hibs were desperate to get back into the game. They had a few shots over the bar. They also had a corner which came off the bar, and then there was a point blank save again by Theo Snelders. But Rangers held out and won the match 4-3. An absolute classic game. I know you've watched it back, Derek. I've watched it about three times now, just to, you know, actually see us have a victory against Hibs. You know what I mean? So it was a great game. Great players on show: Gascoigne and Alberts, and of course Marco Negri, who we keep forgetting about how much a phenomenal goal scorer he was, and what might have been if he'd have stayed, you know, beyond sort of 6 months that he was there and he hadn't got injured. It was just a great game to watch, and if anybody gets the chance to go back and watch it, you should go back in. I say 4th of October 1997, Hibs 3, Rangers 4, a great game.
Yep, I don't remember much of it first hand, but looking back in the game, it was certainly a great game, and, you know, as you said, good to get a victory against Hibs for a change.
I'll tell you a wee story, Derek. That was the first time that I had ever been Easter Road, across that wee sort of dodgy bridge that they've got there. But I remember before the match, I never had any colours on. I had my scarf underneath my jacket, tied round my waist. And as you know, by the size of me, it must have been a long scarf for me to do that. But we were standing, we went, there was a few of us, and we were all hungry, so we thought, oh, there's a baker's there, then we'll go and stand in the baker's. And I'm not trying to say that certain people from Edinburgh or that end of Edinburgh, you know, I'm not stereotyping, but this can only be described as total junkie gadget. He walks into the baker's, we're all standing in a line. He walks up to the sort of self-service area, picks up three sandwiches and two pies, puts them in his pocket and just walks out and smells it. It's like brazen his head and just walks in, picks his stuff, puts it in his pocket and walks out. It's like, this is incredible.
He must have had an agreement with the owner or something.
I don't think so. No, I will always remember that. I've only been back to Easter Road, I think, maybe twice since then. But that was, it's certainly a fantastic game to watch. And if you're looking for any old Rangers games to look back, that's a phenomenal match to sit and watch, just with the amount of goals and two absolutely phenomenal goals for Alberts and from Paul Gascoigne. So go and watch it.
We'll move on now. We'll go to the What a Player section.
Yep. Brian, I mean, everybody wants to know, how come you are so good?
Right, so in tradition of tying in a What a Player with the classic match, not his, you know, he's probably his best game for Rangers, but certainly a good one where he scored a couple. We've got Marco Negri.
Yep.
Born 27th of October 1970 in Milan, he's now retired and he's played as a striker for a good few different teams. Started off his career at Cosenza, went to Perugia, that's where we signed him for £3.5 million. He had, you know, the best of what, half a season with us?
Half a season, yep.
He went out on loan to Vicenza after that. He never really had a good spell there. He then went to Bologna, Cagliari, Livorno, and then back to Perugia.
Do you mean Calgary?
Calgary, Cagliari.
See, Derek, that's you showing your age, because, see, when I was young, they used to do Football Italia in Channel 4, and you would have known all these teams' names, and you're watching that, but you're obviously too young for all of that.
Go, Lazio! See, I'm not that young. Yes, Marco Negri, he played 39 times for us in all competitions, and an incredible 36 goals.
I know, unbelievable.
our boss Gordon says he was literally the best striker to play ever play for Rangers, and when these stats, you know, I can argue, isn't it?
I know, it's just again, it's always going to be what if with Marco Negri, because there's actually a montage that you can go onto YouTube and see, you know, nearly all the goals that he scored. And there was hardly any of them were like wee toe pokes or, you know, bundled over Derek. He scored some absolutely phenomenal goals for Rangers, and his first touch was fantastic. And he just, at the start when he came in, he looked really sort of lackadaisical and lazy, but he still managed to score goals. But as he was coming to the sort of end of his playing time at Rangers before he got injured, he looked absolutely phenomenal, and I always remember the game at Parkhead when he scored against Celtic. I thought, this guy is absolutely terrorising them up front. They couldn't get near him, and he was just looking so sharp and so fit at that point, sort of halfway through the season. And then, obviously, he got injured. There was a lot of stories as to how he got injured and the circumstances, and he never played again for Rangers after he got injured, and it was such a pity, because if that guy had kept playing, we would have got, I mean, am I right in saying that was a 10 in a row season? Or the season we're going for 10 in a row?
Yeah.
If that guy had kept playing and scoring for us, we would have got that 10 in a row season, nae bother. So I don't know if it'll ever come out the exact circumstances as to what happened to him and his injury. There was a lot of talk about actually being another player that injured him because of some off-the-field antics, which we'll not get into. But he was a fantastic striker for us, and when we look back now at what we're watching, and we see, you know, the type of goals that guy scored, and, you know, for a guy that was supposed to be unfit and slow, God, we could be doing with that in the team now, we really could.
I mean, he was just, I think Gordon's right, he was probably the best striker we've ever had at the squad, because, as you said, they weren't just, I mean, there was a few tap-ins, as you always got, and I think there was about four penalties, but that montage, you're looking back in it, there were some absolutely great goals. He's some of his skill to get the ball in the first place, and then to take it on, and then the skill to score the goal was amazing. As you said, there was certainly some stories about what happened to his injury. He came out quite recently, I think it was, and said that he was lucky to actually even see again, because he had some sort of retina issue, and that was the reason why his form, you know, dipped so much, is the fact that he struggled to regain his, it was something to do with his balance and his proper vision as well, in relation to it. So it's a big shame that happened.
Yeah.
And
am I right in saying he signed up for Rixon's benefit match? Or
I can't remember, to be honest. I know Gattuso has, but I'm not too sure about Negri.
I know he's been on Twitter a lot saying, you know, he's going to be doing, he's been linking himself to that and posting up sort of adverts for it and stuff for Rixon's benefit game. So I don't know if he's going to be playing or not. It would be great to see him back playing at Ibrox again. I'd take him the new Derek, to be perfectly honest.
I think most people would.
I know, but absolutely phenomenal player again, and there's a brilliant montage that somebody's put up on YouTube that you should go and check out, especially if you were unlucky enough not to see him actually playing that sort of half a season. If you're maybe too young, go and see this guy on YouTube and see some of the goals that he scored. Absolutely fantastic.
Yep. Just remember as well, his probably standout game for me was obviously the five goals he scored at Ibrox against Dundee United. Absolutely masterclass in how he scored.
And the goals that he scored were phenomenal in that game as well, Derek. There were some absolute peaches.
Yeah.
And he wasn't just the type of guy that only scored at home as well. He scored a hell of a lot of goals away, especially grounds like Tynecastle and things like that. You know, hard away games. He scored some fantastic goals for us there as well, and the burst of pace that he had on him was incredible, and just that way, he was just great at getting onto through balls. I think he was a sort of a dream sort of striker for attacking forwards. You know, he always gave them an option as to where to pass the ball, he gave himself a chance to score and things like that, and maybe some of your strikers should be looking back on him as well and watching some of the things that he'd done to maybe help them get their goal scoring form again.
Yeah, I mean, one thing is, his feature was the fact that he never really celebrated. He's always classed as a very sulky player.
I remember him celebrating when he scored at Parkhead, though. Absolutely mental in that game. So, no, you're right, he was known as being a sort of sulking striker, because he didn't celebrate a lot, but he certainly celebrated against Celtic when he scored. I think he knew how much a big deal that was, so It was phenomenal, and we keep saying, what if, you know, if he'd have stayed fit, what kind of player he would have went on to have been for Rangers. But again, another hard luck story when it comes to us for strikers, eh?
Yeah. I mean, I'm reading an article here that was on The Guardian, and it's got 10 of the worst foreign signings of all time. And for some incredible reason, Marco Negri is included in that.
I think
it's because he spent so much time on our books but out injured.
Yeah.
And with the money he kind of raked in, which is no reason to kind of class him as one of the worst signings, because ultimately he was one of the best signings.
Yep.
Funnily enough as well, Stefan Givars is on this list as well.
Yeah, well, exactly. You've only got to look at players like that, guys like Daniel Prodan that never actually played for us, guys like Oleg Kuznetsov who got a horrific injury, Sebastian Rosenthal got a horrific injury as well. So no, I certainly wouldn't say he was one of the worst signings, and he gave us half a season of sheer joy. So
I mean, I think if he had played, he still played the full season, that would have been easily the golden boot, and probably you're maybe looking at 50, 60 goals that year, which would have been just, out of this world.
Aye.
But
and it would have definitely got us the 10 in a row. But again, it's what ifs, whereas, but great to look back on, Derek, and reminisce, as I say, especially the now with the team playing so bad. It's good to look back and see us when we're actually successful and scoring a lot of goals, eh?
Yes. Right, so we'll move on now, and we will go to the news.
Good evening, I'm Will McAvoy. Good evening, I'm Will McAvoy. This is Newsnight from New York City. I'm Will McAvoy.
Yeah, it's very sad that the newsroom's finished now, Dave, isn't it?
Aye, I know, that's it, but I've still got 3 episodes to watch, Derek, so don't spoil it for me.
What are you doing, Dave? What are you doing?
Oh, my wife at the moment is addicted to Game of Thrones, so we've watched the whole of the first season of Game of Thrones. This is the second time I've watched it, because we're wanting to try and be up to date when the new season starts, so it's basically that's all we've been watching on the TV at the moment. So
what you're saying is your wife likes to watch porn?
Well, it is, eh? If it's no porn, it's graphic violence, so I don't know what she enjoys more. I think it's the graphic violence more than anything else, Derek, but there you go.
Yes. Right, so obviously Dave said this before, is that one bit of bad news, we're kind of expecting it to be honest, but not in the circumstances or for the fee or to the club that it went to, but Lewis McLeod is off to Brentford for I think it was less than £1 million.
Yep.
Absolutely disgraceful. It was basically, it came out and it was basically said the money we got for him is used for working capital. You know, that is an absolute shock. We should be use that player as the basis of our team for the foreseeable future and build the team around them.
Derek, as you mentioned, all the players that are going out of contract this summer, there's only one player, possibly him and Wallace, who's not really shown much for us this season as well. But well, McLeod is the one player that we would have done anything just to keep a hold of. And as you say, build the team around, get him as our main attacking midfielder in the centre and build the team around him. And the fact that he's went, and this is no disrespect to Brentford, because I know they're going to get great guns in the Championship. If this had been a Premiership team, Derek, we would have said, right, fair enough, it's a chance for a guy, you know, this young guy to go and play in the Premiership. Or even a team, you know, a really big team in the Championship, a Leeds United or a Sheffield Wednesday or, you know, Norwich City or someone who's got a good chance, you know, of getting honours at a big team. We might have said, right, fair enough, the standard that he's playing at the moment is pretty bad. But for him to go to Brentford, for him to go for under £1 million and then for us to get the slap in the face to say, this is for working capital, it's just unacceptable. The guy was our only shining light over the last few seasons, and now he's gone, and I don't see anybody replacing him. I don't see anybody bringing the spark to the team like what he does. And he scored a lot of important goals for us as well, Derek, which I can't see anybody doing either. So
no,
it's just been bad all round. The fee that we got for the type of player that he is was terrible. And again, we've just been taking the piss out of us by our own board and by other football clubs out there because of the position that we're in. It's just it's bad news all round.
Yeah, no ill feeling towards the player at all. I mean, certainly good luck to him, and he is going to be, if he, as long as he gets his chance and he's around a bunch of players that support him, he's going to be some player. I think certainly he's going to be a future, you know, full Scotland cap player as well. so certainly wish him luck to him.
I hope he is a success, Derek, and he doesn't turn out to be go down and have a few quiet games and then forgotten about like a lot of players are. I hope he does make it, and I hope he, you know, moves on to bigger and better things. And as you say, absolutely no ill will to the guy. I've maybe got a wee feeling that he's been pushed rather than wanting to go, to be perfectly honest with you, but it's one of these things. But just really disappointing that he's away for the team.
Yep. Next thing we've got here is a bit of scandal. I never really heard much about it in the paper because I don't read the rags, basically. But looks as if Mark Hatley and Ali's had a bit of a falling out. It turns out that Hatley has allegedly been speaking to members of the board behind Ali's back to try and muscle his way in and force Ali out the door. So I don't know how much is truth in that. It's coming for the Red Tops as usual. I don't know what that's all about, to be honest. Certainly a shame if any of it's true, though.
Definitely, because the two of them are two absolute legends at the club. They were a phenomenal strike force. They were always seen as being good pals. I really hope that there's no as much truth than that. He's maybe came out and criticised the team, possibly, and he's maybe been misquoted. I don't know, you know what the press are like, but as you say, it would be a shame if that was the case.
Yep. Next thing we've got here is, you've mentioned a bit of it earlier on, is that the Rixon benefit match has been confirmed for Sunday the 25th of January.
Yep.
Certainly, our team is a Rangers select versus an All-Star team, so certainly our team is lining up to be quite a formidable team, and certainly the All-Star team looks pretty cool as well.
Do you think that we could just lock that Rangers team into a cupboard and then just pull them out on the match day and tell them that it's actually, you know, their next actual league game and have them playing instead of the first team?
Oh, I'm sure somebody would have an issue. Oh, here, the EBTs and blah, 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 blah. So
there you go, lads. I know that we said it was the night, but it's actually in 3 days' time. So just stay here and turn up at 3 o'clock on Saturday, and you can go. They probably would play better, Derek, to be honest with you. Even though the vast majority of them are in their 40s and their 50s now, they'd probably play better than the team that we've got now.
Next thing we've got here is we've had a good few players recalled from loan, which is a good thing. Not that they look as if they're going to get any games, mind you.
I was just going to mention that, but on you go.
So Crawford, Gallagher, Tom Walsh, Halkett and McCausland all back from loan. Unfortunately, though, Barry Mackay, Gasparato and Darren Stoney all stay at Ray, Airdrie and Ashrunra, respectively.
Now, Derek, going by how poor our midfield has been, how poor our strike force has been, and how utterly shambolic our right back has been, surely McCausland, who's been out getting first team experience, would be slotted into right back straight away. How poor our midfield has been with Black and Hutton in there, we would maybe give Robbie Crawford a chance, you know, a guy that's no stranger to playing in the first team. Give him a shot back in there, and certainly, my God, that I've been raving about this guy constantly. Every time I've looked, he's been scoring. I think he's scored about 6 goals since he's been away playing in our division as the young boy Gallagher. Now, a guy fully paced, so strong, you know, a real hunger for goals that could really cause problems. I see scoring goals in the same league that we're playing in. Surely he could give him a shot and put him up front and say, right, that's you. You're getting your chance here. We've got nothing to lose. We're at home. We're playing Dumbarton. Surely you can go out and score some goals. It would have caused more problems than what the strikers had done anyway, Derek. I've got no doubts about that, but such a shame that they've been recalled and none of them got a chance at all. None of them were near that first team in that last game, and it's totally shocking, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about they've had experience. Crawford struggled to get a game where he was at loan, to be honest.
Was he?
But certainly Gallagher, McCausland, Stoney, Mackay, and who was the other guy? Gasparato. See, when they've all came in to our first team, they all played well.
Yep.
And for some reason they got dropped and then farmed out on loan. Is this just to accommodate all these supposed darlings, the fact that they're on their high wages?
Definitely. Certainly, I know that McCausland's been playing, and I know that Callum Gallagher's been playing, and Callum Gallagher's been doing well and scoring goals. So, he's, you know, a guy that definitely deserves his chance. And am I right in saying that Barry Mackay's played almost every match for Raith Rovers that he's been there, or the vast majority of the games that he's been with. So, you know, again, playing in that division on the left-hand side, we're showing nothing on the left-hand side to know. We're playing Stevie Smith at left midfield. Surely a young guy with loads of pace and, you know, plenty of skill would be able to do something for us there in Mackay. And again, no stranger to playing in the first team. He scored a lot of goals for us in the first season when we were playing back in the second division. You know, in his first season for playing with us, he scored a lot of goals. So surely he would get a chance, but it doesn't look like it, Derek. And again, a shame.
Yeah, absolutely. Next thing I've got here. Strangely, I know that I'm actually really given to flying fucks, but the iReady podcast and my personal Twitter have been blocked by Phil Three Names.
I know, that's your fault, Derek. That's shocking. I'm taking nothing to do with that. The man is an established journalist. You know, he got absolutely no bias towards a certain team and shows no hatred to our club. I think you're just picking on that poor guy. I really do.
We've mentioned him sparingly a few times on the pod. And I've never tweeted him at all,
Derek,
from our one.
Just purely for comic value, we've mentioned him on the pod. Just to give us a wee laugh, just to show how obsessed certain folk can be with the demise of our great club. And that's basically all his life is. He's basically trying to get as many negative things about our club as possible. And we've mentioned him, as I say, just for pure comic value, because I don't really think there's that many people really treat him that seriously. Certainly if you know the green and white persuasion, they certainly take him seriously, but I think the rest of the journalistic world know that it is just for comic value now that he was shown as being what he really is out there, and basically just a hater of our club, really.
You know, it just shows you, though, that he does listen to it, which is quite sad because it's a Rangers podcast. So, hi, Phil, if you're listening.
Please tell more people to download. We're looking for as many listeners as possible. On you go.
Aye, but Rangers fans, though, and you probably know enough of them anyway. But either that, he's just been trolling around Twitter, just blocking people associated with Rangers, which I put on Twitter, and a few people came back and said, aye, you know, he's done the same to me, and I've never mentioned him, so... So leave him there. Don't really give a two flying fucks about him anyway. Another person who's blocked my own personal Twitter is Bill McMurdo.
Oh, Derek, what do you think you've done to poor Bill?
Poor Bill. You know, is this how he's going off the deep end? His supposed fans group that he's set up himself. No idea how many people he's got in that. But certainly his group put out a statement after the AGM shaming all the shareholders that booed. So he was treating us like contempt as well. So I sent him a message, just, you know, perfectly reasonable, just saying, have you got any comment as to, you know, your pals Easdale and Summers as to the contempt they show their shareholders with? Obviously, they didn't like that, so he blocked me.
Yeah, well, if anybody's interested in joining Bill's Rangers Supporters Group, I believe their next annual general meeting's in the phone box outside the Grapes Bar. I'll read it. I don't think there's a lot of folk hold Bill's views very highly anymore after everything that's happened over the last 2 years and his constant support of the board and things like that. So a lot of fans have been very... annoyed with a lot of his comments. I know you have as well, Derek, and that's shocking that he's blocked you, though, Derek. I mean, I would take that personally if I was you.
Well, I mean, he's been flip-flopping back and forward. Every time one of the board members gets ousted that he's, supported, he flip-flops and changes his opinion, and then he's been very, very quiet ever since the news of King and all that's came out, so that's a bit telling, isn't it?
Oh, well.
Yes, the next thing I've got here is, I'm going to keep this brief for the fact that it's an ongoing criminal investigation. I don't think we covered this the last time as well. The Gang of Four has been arrested and charged on fraud charges in relation to the White Takeover.
Yep.
Yes, it's in relation to a few guys from Duff and Phelps and a couple other guys as well. They've been charged on fraud charges in relation to the takeover. We'll keep that brief there. Certainly they've been bailed now. The big one here is Craig White was arrested as well on the same charges.
Yep.
A warrant was issued for him for that charge of fraud to be seen by police. His spokesman, can only guess who that is, turned out to say yes. He says he'll be back very shortly. He's making arrangements to come back to the UK to assist with police investigations.
There's a warrant for his arrest.
Yes. Well, it turned out that he was actually just came off the plane after landing in Mexico.
Looking like creeping Jesus. Did you see him, Derek? He'd lost loads of weight, he grew his hair long, he had a beard. I think he was trying to be incognito, do you think?
He wasn't a man trying to evade authorities.
See, when I seen him, I was like, that's incredible. He must have lost about 3 stone in weight, his hair was really long, he had the beard and all that. I thought, that's, you know, absolutely incredible. But fair play to the authorities for finding out where he was and getting him back into the country. Yeah. And I don't know where he is at the moment, Derek. If he's on bail, then he'll still be in the country somewhere. He'll not be allowed to leave.
Well, apparently part of his condition was bail, that his passport was surrendered. Yep. However, if you want to get out of the country and you've got the means and the know-how, then you'll probably get out easy. So, as you said, don't know where he is.
A rowing boat over to Millport.
Well, the funny thing is, a second in between the first warrant issued for that and him getting arrested, a second warrant was issued for his non-appearance at the Ticketus case. Yep. That's going on in the High Court as well now, which, strangely enough, the judge threw out any chance of him going to jail for non-appearance of that. So he certainly was dealt a favour there. But so it's going to take years and years to sort out, so we'll just need to wait and see what happens about that, and, you know, hopefully justice will be done in the end. But
if you say, you'll not say much more because it is an ongoing criminal investigation, so we'll leave it at that.
He's not guilty until proven guilty, so allegedly. I've got two other things here. Both of them are football related, but a bit funny. The articles came out some time ago, which is we've been waiting for a chance to do this. So the first one, Uni bans football team's kit because it's sponsored by Pornhub.
Pornhub, really?
Yes.
No, now that I know what Pornhub is.
What is
it? I'm
getting the idea. That's your wife. After securing Pornhub as their sponsors, Rutherford Raiders have been stripped of their kit by Kent University. Originally, the Raiders couldn't afford to find any sponsors, so for a laugh, they stuck the Pornhub logo on their kit. After seeing the photo online, Pornhub bosses decided to sponsor them for real.
Why should he? Why do Rangers not do that? They could put Pepsi and write Pepsi on the front of their tops, put it online, and then maybe Pepsi would come in and say, right, there you go, there's 10 million or something like that to be your actual sponsors.
Yeah, exactly.
What about Pornhub?
Why not? So, however, after when the university saw it, they stripped them of their kit and even threatened to ban them from their college league.
That's a bit much, eh?
Yep. A spokesman from the university said, the University of Kent Sports Department would never sanction sponsorship of this type. It's totally inappropriate.
So they threatened to withdraw them from the Intercontinental Cup, is what
Inter-College League.
Inter-College League, rather than the interracial orgy that they've been sponsored by. Oh, dear, brilliant. Right, okay.
And the next story, the last story I've got here is football. Ricardo Ferreira handed a 50-year ban after a referee attack.
50-year ban?
50-year. A Switzerland-based amateur footballer has been banned for 50 years after kicking the ball in the referee's face and spraying him with water.
He kicked the ball in the referee's face and then what?
Spraying him with water.
So he never punched him or anything like that?
No.
So he's for 50 years?
Yes. He's already served a 45-game ban for assaulting opposition players. Yep. He said that he had expected 1 or 2 years maximum, but 50 years, that's my footballing life.
That's right, exactly. I wonder how old the guy is.
Was amateur footballer. He's 28.
I was going to say, if it's amateur football, he'll be about 45.
Well, no, he's 28, so that's him.
That's a bit much, eh? 50 games. Considering you had, like, say, Di Canio, remember, he shoved the referee over and, like, exactly. That as well. But a bit severe, but there you go.
Right. So that about wraps it up. What we're going to do now is we're just going to leave you in the hands of our drunken interviews with one of our colleagues who knows nothing about football, but we decided to put it in because it's quite funny as well. And also a guy we talk about all the time, his name's Andy. Guy goes to every single game, home and away.
Home and away.
He's a great guy, knowledgeable guy as well. Plus he was on the TV, him and his brother, a couple of weeks ago as well.
That's right, he was, yeah.
Right, so just before I leave you that, we just want to say thanks for bearing with us for this time. We're hopefully going to get another pod out very shortly. It's just we've had a lot of issues with our work life and personal life, and we're trying to get Baz Bowski from the We Welcome the Chase podcast on. But
Baz, if you're listening, we will definitely get you on soon. Things have been really hectic with the two of us we're working and stuff. It's going to get worse, Derek, because we're no longer going to be working with each other within about a month's time, and we'll be working in different places, but we will still get the pod out as regularly as possible.
Yeah. I'm going to cry, man. I'm not going to miss you.
Shocking, eh?
So it's we'll leave you in the capable hands of a drunken Derek and Dave and a drunken Lindsay and Andy.
Yeah, spot on. Take care, guys.
Cheers, bye.
Bye.
Hello, this is Derek and Dave on our Watch Night Out. How are you doing?
I'm absolutely pissed. Are you?
Oh, man, I'm done.
We're in Glasgow somewhere. I've got no idea where I am. But what's happening?
We're pissed. So, what are we going to say about Ali McCoist?
I'll try and be diplomatic here. We both have been quite vocal with the fact that the team has been really underperforming. We can't see the team playing any better. We've been very we've been very critical of his team selection and where players have been playing certain positions, and we are looking possibly for a new manager. I know I'm saying possibly. I know that you're desperate for him to go to Derek.
Fuck that, he's bish.
I'm trying to be diplomatic here. There's been a lot of talk who's going to be taking over the reins, but McCoist is still in charge. He's told the board that he's handed in his resignation. He's going to be there for at least 12 months. At least, unless the board can pay him off.
Right, so I'm going to hand it over to now Lindsay, esteemed colleague here. What do you think about Ali McCoist and the situation that's happened to him?
Well, I really like Ali McCoist, and I think it's quite sad what's happened to him. He's played for Rangers for a long time, and he's basically got all the shit. He's had all the shit landed on him, and it's a shame.
Do you think that everything that's happened to Rangers in the last 3 years,
and he
has been the sort of rock and the stability for the team,
yes,
and you think he should be given his chance at the club?
Yes.
One last question. Do you pure fancy the pants off him?
Yes.
Right, Andy.
Right, so we're here with another one of our colleagues here.
This is one of our main colleagues. This is the man that we talk about on the podcast week in, week out, that goes to all the matches, home and away. Big Andy.
Hello, how are you doing?
Right, Andy. What do you make of the current situation the club is in, and do you think Ali McCoist is the man for the job?
I don't think Ali McCoist is now the man for the job. I think we've had a lot of false dawns regarding the position of the club, and I think now it's time for a change. I've never been one to call for Ali McCoist's head, but the recent performances over the past few weeks have led me now to think it's time for a change, and I would certainly welcome a change in the management of the club.
Right, Andy, going on that, has this just been in the last few weeks that you've thought about this, or has this been from the start of the season, or the season before, or have you thought that Ali's been the man for the job the whole time, or has this just been a recent thing that you've thought that he's been, you know, a change is needed in the club?
I've always thought Ali McCoist is and always will be a Rangers legend, but the recent performances have led me to believe that he's not the man to take Rangers forward. I would always think that the last few performances, he's not been able to inspire the team to performances against the likes of Alloa, against Cowdenbeath. Hence the reason I think it's now time for a change. And although it pains me to say so, it's time for Ali to step up.
Okay, Andy. Thanks very much for that, mate. Cheers.
cakes at half time.